Welcome to the Autonicast. I'm Ed Niedermeyer, along with Alex Roy and Kirsten Korosek. Sensor Week rolls on here at the Autonicast with a conversation with Ronnie Wellingstein and Nate Meyer of the LiDAR company Oryx Vision. Now, this is one of my favorite episodes that we recorded while we were in Israel for Mobility Week. So I'm not going to do too much by the way of introduction, but the whole thing really just speaks for itself. You just have to listen to it. But before we start, I'd just like to take a moment and ask you to imagine that you are sitting at a cafe outside, right on the water in beautiful Tel Aviv, and you have delicious seafood in front of you. And in front of you are two of the smartest people you've ever spoken to in the vision space. And with that mental image in mind, I give you Ronnie Wellingstein and Nate Meyer of Oryx Vision.
All right, well, let's roll right into this. We're here with Oryx Vision, here with Ronnie Wellingstein and Nate Meyer. And we are going to talk a little bit about why your solution is different.
Okay.
So explain to me how it is not traditional LiDAR.
Okay, I'll with your permission, I'll start with the basics. If you are about to build a LiDAR tomorrow morning, if you feel like quitting your day job and start building LiDARs, the first decision that you need to make is what kind of... you need to pair a transmitter and a receiver. And those that and transmitter need to transmit laser pulses, light pulses, and the receiver needs to receive it. If you are about to use cheap sensor from silicon or such materials, silicon is easily triggered by 905 nanometer, so you may use the 905 nanometer wavelength. However, you may have a problem with eye safety because our eyes are focusing 905 nanometer. So if you are about to design such system, what you would do is you would squeeze as much power as possible out of the laser up to the eye safety limitation, focus it on a single pixel, and from now on start rotating that laser beam from one pixel to the other, meaning you scan it. And that's basically the concept behind the 905 nanometer systems. Velodyne were, I believe, the first company to produce such complex and smart systems. And believe me, they built great systems. It's an unbelievable company. They develop great technology.
You're a nice guy. Nice guy.
I really appreciate what David Hall did. I never met him, but I really appreciate what he did. I think he made a revolution in actually building such a complex machine for a reasonable cost. And $20,000 to $100,000 for such machines is a fair businessman. Now, when the whole thing started around LiDAR, my point of view is that when I look at it from the outside, I think Waymo was the first company to start really putting heavy efforts on this mission. And Google understood, at that time, Google spent tons of money and were able to recruit the top talent in the industry. And they did. And they understood quite fast that LiDAR is critical, but they decided that 905 nanometer, in a way, is a dead end for long range. Else, they would have acquired Velodyne or built a 905 nanometer systems. Apparently, they did not. The reason for that, I believe they understood that there is a limited range of such wavelengths of this technology, and the limits come from the limits of eye safety, of our eyes, not related to David Hall's capabilities or others. Then what Google did, if we look at it from the outside, as when I read the newspaper or the press coverage about Google Waymo project, what they did, they switched to 1550 nanometer. 1550 nanometer is a wavelength that is triggered by so-called INGAS, indium gallium arsenide sensors. And there are lasers for telecom applications that can, in a way, modified for such applications. Google, I believe, figured out that it's going to be super complex and super expensive to build a long-range, heavy-duty system rotating all over the car like the Velodyne, And they did, I believe, at least from what I understood, they decided to optimize on cost and on power consumption, because they were running it at that time on electric vehicles, the little, this tiny little Beetle. And they decided to build some kind of a rotating telescope. And that's and I think the guy that heads Waymo at a certain point said that they were able to bring the price down to $15,000 or $7,000 per unit. But it's a rotating telescope. Luminar, on the other hand, built an amazing system in 1550 nanometer, and he can definitely provide the range and the resolution. And he built a wonderful, beautiful system. But I think that, I'm sorry, LiDAR is about three pillars or three foundation: cost, performance, and durability. In 1550 nanometer, you can tick the box of performance, but the challenge is to tick the box on cost and durability. Which
because
makes
the Velodyne units, obviously, these big spinning units, the lifespan can't be as good as a solid state.
Well, there are spinning units in 905 nanometer from Valeo, which are automotive grade, so they must be very reliable. And again, the issue is performance there and cost. There is a lot of money invested in this space, so the assumption that a small startup with $10-20 million will jump out of the cake, we say in Hebrew, and show up with an amazing solution is quite low. I wouldn't count on that.
Is that a Hebrew saying? The likelihood of an amazing solution is quite low. I haven't heard that one. But go on.
No, in Israel we are still in the wedding business, so we keep thinking about getting married. Oryx took a different approach. Oryx started with technology to detect light with microscopic antennas that we deposit on silicon. The technology came from the need to implement low-cost light sensing technology, which is wavelength agnostic, which means we can detect in any wavelength, not just in 905 or 1550.
So to be specific, you're not transmitting an optical, you're not transmitting a signal.
No, we do.
Okay.
We do, but however, we do not have the limitations of specific, the receiving element that we use is not a photoelectric detector, okay. It's an antenna, which can detect in any wavelength we want. We just need to design the antenna that way. So we have few advantages. By adding this kind of technology to the equation, we can basically use any laser we want and any wavelength. And we decided to pick 10 microns. So we are building our antennas to detect 10 microns. That's just much smaller wavelength, and it can actually be detected with antennas. However, the wavelength of this light is very short, and you need very tiny antennas, and you need some kind of unique rectification element or diodes that can rectify light to actually detect the light and process the signal. And the concept was defined in the 30s. In the 50s, someone came with the idea that if you will build an antenna and you'll put the two poles of the antenna a few atoms apart, you will get some kind of rectification. And someone in the 60s was able to prove it. And since then, but it was a very complex thing to put two pieces of metal two or six atoms apart, not 20 or 50, because you cannot measure it, and if they touch it, either you don't get this kind of rectification. So my partner David invented this kind of a process to fabricate such antennas at very low cost with simple materials on silicon as a top layer of a silicon chip. So what we are building basically is an imager, like an imager of the camera, where on each and every pixel we put an antenna. So we are able to build silicon with few tens of thousands or few thousands, few hundreds of thousands of antennas on the silicon, and that's basically our camera that can take can measure light. And we can design the antenna to detect any wavelength we want. So 905 nanometer, we have eye safety issues. in 1550, the lasers are complex. We found out that in 10 micron, there is an unbelievable interesting sweet spot. In 10 microns, there are gas lasers, the CO2 lasers, very old lasers that you used for cutting metals and for hair removal or for surgery. Those lasers operate in 10 microns, which is away from any eye safety issues. The 10 microns propagates very well in fog and dust and snow and rain. And more than that, the coherence length or the phase noise, the signal is so clean and pure of those lasers that we can actually modulate it. We can modulate the phase and implement what's called FM versus AM, F frequency modulated LIDARs. Same as the radars of the on vehicles today are FM radars, we are building an FM LIDAR, frequency modulated LIDAR. The impact of frequency modulated LIDAR is approximately, the performance is approximately 7 orders of magnitude better compared to the AM type of LIDARs. So what we are building, we're building basically a LIDAR, an FM LIDAR. It's basically a camera that we have a laser that sends pulses of light. Since our link budget, or since we have the advantage of FM on one hand, and the cost of our sensor is very low, instead of putting one sensor and scanning the world pixel by pixel, we just put a matrix of the entire picture and we illuminate the entire picture at once, so we don't scan, it's a flash system. And we detect with the antennas the phase shift between the transmitted light and the received light. So we can detect both range and the Doppler shift or the speed, same as radars, but it, in a way you may consider it as a multi-beam non-scanning radar that operates in optical wavelength. And that's basically what we are doing. So from cost perspective, so we're talking about, talk about performance, cost, and durability. Performance-wise, gas lasers, CO2 lasers are very cheap to build.
And there's no moving parts.
Mm-hmm. So it's all solid state. The sensor is made of standard silicon process with our top layer on top, which is also very cheap. And so it said cost, durability, and performance. Since it's an FM system, we're able to detect objects with a very low reflectivity, 5% reflectivity, from approximately 200 meters. Today, for example, the traditional AM systems in 905 can detect such objects from 50 meters, I believe.
So can you see out to 300 meters?
We believe that we'll see metal objects like cars, motorcycles from 300 meters as well. We face problems that we sometimes see objects from very far ranges. Objects with what we call retroreflective type of or retroreflectors.
And the size of the units relative to traditional LIDAR?
The size of the unit is the end product is expected to be like this, which is like
you're holding a small pineapple.
I believe we'll end up like a pack of 5 or 7 iPhones, one on top of the other. Such iPhones, yeah, iPhone Plus, 5 or 7 iPhones.
And so is this the first deployment of such technology anywhere, or was this, did this come from military applications previously? Or what's the history of this?
It started with an attempt to detect light for night vision applications.
I like those.
And we figured out that the market opportunity is bigger in LIDAR. And we had a lot of discussions about this with our investors. Where to go, we understood that LIDAR will take longer. especially in the automotive world.
So you, the company was launched before you knew what the final application was going to be?
The company was actually launched 9 years ago by David. He was operating it in a sort of bootstrap stealth mode for 6 years before I met him. And he got funded from the Israeli government. The Israeli government have some kind of a program to fund crazy ideas with a strong scientific roots, deep scientific roots, and with a very high potential to influence the economy. So he got funded. He got funding for this for around 6 years. I joined him about 3 years ago. I invested personally some money in the company to figure out to work together to find out what should be the right direction. And then we started working with Bessemer, our Series A investor. What would be the best opportunity to apply this technology? And we decided to focus on LiDARs for ADAS and autonomous vehicles. We knew it's going to take some time. It's not just a 2 years exercise or integration effort. And that's the difference today between most of the companies. And so Bessemer backed up in the first round, and in the second round we were backed by Walden Riverwood Ventures and Third Point from the West Coast. Bessemer also joined the round together with Maniv, Union Venture, and Trax.
So do you already have a customer on board?
We do not publicize any commercial engagements.
We are actively working with OEMs.
Nate, what's your job at the company? why don't you roll right in there?
I'm doing business development. I joined the company from Bessemer. So
I guess we're about to switch from the technical part to the fun part then.
Isn't the technical the fun part?
By the way, before we started here, Ronnie asked whether or not we had a technical background of the Autonicast. Was that the technical part? Are we past it? Okay, we're past it. Ronnie, what was your background in the military? Because you had quite a story there. I don't care if he's eating. This is the Autonicast.
Well, the food here is so great, so it's almost irresistible.
You didn't work in radar in the military. You were in sonar.
I worked on similar technology in sonar. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong. I have my background is engineering. I studied engineering. I have a bachelor degree and master degree. But fortunately for the world, the idiot that will pay money from something that I developed was not yet born. So they always, when they're looking for engineers, they always found better engineers around me, wherever I went. So I'm mostly more in the product management, product definition, strategy, and business execution. That's my background. I spent the last, it's a lot of time, more than 20 years, mostly in a software company in the telecom world. And this is, and after many years in software, I decided it's about time to do something serious and something physical and to move to hardware.
When we see LiDARs from other companies, deployed on test vehicles. They are always placed on the roof. There's two units, there's four units. And when we see concepts of vehicles that are 3, 5, 7 years out, they often depict two units in the front, on the corners, maybe three units. What is the field of view of an Oryx Vision device? Is it integrated in the same kind of slots that the LiDARs would go? Can you use a single unit in the front? I mean,
our system, in a way, is quite similar to a camera. So, same as when you have a camera and you can put in the front multiple lenses or different types of lenses to, you can buy an Nikon camera and put a fisheye and a tele lens on the same camera, we can do the same. So we have, with the same configuration, we can put multiple optics. So the same silicon can be used in different kind of modes. The first product that we'll distribute will have 10 by 30 and 22 by 66 degrees. It has those two options.
I'm curious about cost. A lot of times when you talk about cost, there's it gets kind of conveniently sort of glossed over that some of that is intrinsic to the technology. Some technologies are and the components that make it up are just cheaper. Some of it have to do with manufacturing. Some of them have to do with even estimated scale. So a company will sort of estimate that, oh, in a year we'll be building a million of those, and with the economies of scale, our cost will be X. So I'm just wondering sort of like when you talk about the cost of the sensor, you know, to what extent, like what are your assumptions that go into it, and sort of where do the cost reductions relative to what else is out there come from?
Our system leverages the similar architecture as a camera. So from cost and economics perspective, we're quite similar, more or less, except the laser. We believe that we'll be able to bring the solution to the market at volumes of approximately 200,000 units at a cost of $250 to the OEM. And we believe that in this amount, we will still have a fair margin for us and for the tier one supplier.
And do you have a specific manufacturing plans? Where you plan on doing it? How, with a partner, yourselves?
We are in touch with the relevant partners in the space.
From our strategy standpoint, we are a tier two company. We're not. I know there's a lot of confusion today between what are the roles of each companies in the autonomous space and in the LiDAR space, especially. We are given our core competency is the actual detector and the antenna itself. We are our business model is to be a tier two company that provides this component and license of a reference design for tier one companies to build a system out of it.
Okay. Yeah, so one thing we've heard from other, Austin Russell from Luminar was recently on our show, and he talked about the way the sensor that they build needs very specialized manufacturing that isn't available to them, which is why they're taking a strategy of manufacturing it themselves. Are there challenges in finding the competence to build these kinds of the sensors that you've designed, or is that something that's fairly available because of the relation to camera technology?
Fortunately, our sensor technology that was invented by David, it's a proprietary process that we own and we control. It's a very simple process that we're using standard off-the-shelf equipment with basic adaptation. So the actual production of our sensor technology is quite simple. We're using off-the-shelf standard CMOS silicon production of foundries, and we bring the wafers at the last step to our own small clean room where we deposit the antenna in a single-step process. So that, from that perspective, we are. It's quite simple. The assembly of our system is similar to the assembly of high-end camera.
So, is anyone else taking a similar approach to you? I mean, I'm sure you'll say that it's very unique, but is there anyone else in the space that's taking the same approach?
Well, today the industry starts to understand that the future of LiDAR is FMCW, but it's quite complex. There are a few companies that are trying to build FM LiDARs, but they have a few challenges around the actual design of the laser. They cannot use a CO2 gas laser, so they are using a standard or modified solid-state fiber lasers. It's not that trivial to bring this kind of telecom or standard laser to high-power automotive-grade standards. So from FM perspective, frequency modulated in 10 microns, we are not aware of anyone else.
Okay, so even if they were, in your view, even if they have somewhat of a similar approach, their timeline is so far behind yours.
I believe so. This is why I wake up every morning and work so hard to make sure it stays like this.
Well, Alex is now ready again to dominate the mic, so I'm going to pass it off to him. I got my one question.
I see that your Series B was $50 million, is that correct?
Yeah.
Which means that you must be fairly close to deploying with your first customer. General timeline. What is the general timeline?
Like a year, 3 years.
Okay. We are targeting SOP around 2022, 2023, start of production. And we'll follow with the A sample, B sample, and such as required to meet those requirements.
So then beyond that, by the time you're in sort of more of a production vehicle, add on a couple, you're looking at 2025-ish?
Yeah, well, it comes to the point of how... What's the market? What's the direction of the market? With your permission, share with you the way I see the market.
Yes.
I see today three segments for LiDARs. The first segment is to enhance ADAS. The dream that we will add a LiDAR to a Mobileye type of ADAS solution, and it will enable autonomous driving or some kind of level 3, is not that trivial. And what we'll see in the next few years is some kind of a LiDAR being added to enhance the level 2 plus to level 2.7, level 2.9, or whatever you want to call it, all the way up to the point that the OEM is still not liable more than the driver himself.
Do you think that will be regulated by, for example, like in the U.S., by the federal government, just like a rear camera is now considered standard?
I think it will take time. It will be a sort of a requirement once the prices will go down. I don't think the government is powerful enough to enforce an installation of $1,000 LiDAR on each and every vehicle.
True, but at least from my sources, I know of at least one major LiDAR company that is actively lobbying the U.S. government right now to make that. So
good for all of us. Anyway, so this is one segment. So if you calculate, if you do top-down analysis on how much money consumers be willing to pay for the incremental value of a LiDAR to an ADAS type of system, you'll see that on an S-Class or a 7 Series type of cars, consumers will be willing to spend a few thousand dollars, and it brings down the cost to approximately $1,000 or $2,000 for the whole system, which indicates that the volumes are not going to be there. The first cars that the first model that did it was the Audi A8 with the Valeo. Now a few other models will see more and more cars, high-end cars with such LiDARs. But the way we see it today, we don't see significant volumes of LiDARs on ADAS cars before 2020, somewhere between 2022 to 2024. And for this to happen, we'll need to see an automotive-grade silicon at least 3 years before. So the market is still not there. So what we'll see in the next few years is approximately a few hundred thousand LiDARs per year, a few hundred million dollars shared by few tier ones. And in these volumes, I have a hard time to see those companies making a killing on this segment. However, since most of the solutions out there today are integrated solutions, we may see a race to the bottom on pricing. The other segment that is the test fleets. Those companies that are building a fleet of few hundred or few thousand cars and are mostly using it to validate their software. They will use whatever LiDAR they can find. Their priority will be number one, performance, number two, reliability, and number three, cost. Their cost is the least of their problems because it's a small fleet. So here we are talking about few thousand, up to 10,000 cars, 20,000 cars per year with LiDARs again in the next few years. Even if they deploy, if they get some kind of a permit to deploy a service in a city, it's not like they'll press the button and they will cover the entire U.S. because they'll have to train the software and optimize it from one city to the other and sort out the regulation and so on. The third segment are the fleets that are built by companies like BMW and Daimler and such. And again, those are test fleets or pilot fleets. These will be, I believe, small fleets of few thousand cars. Their priority will be number one automotive grade, because they cannot put in a car anything which is not an automotive grade, then performance, and then cost. So we see, all in all, I see three segments in a quite low volume in the next 4 to 5 years. The revenue will come, or the high price will come from the high performance, and the low price sliders, it will be a race to the bottom. We'll see a lot of Chinese competitors implementing or replicating those products that are basically integrating off-the-shelf components. So those companies that integrate off-the-shelf components, they buy a laser from here, a sensor from there, and a MEMS mirror from the other source, and package it in an automotive grade, we'll see, or in a some kind of a rigid box, we'll see more and more Chinese competitors out there. And in the around 20, between 22 and 24, we'll see the next generation of LiDAR companies with their own proprietary laser, sensor, or both technologies.
So that doesn't sound like the most compelling business case right now on the short term.
In the short term, it really doesn't
sound like... Why even pursue that then? In your view, is it that by the time that you're in production vehicles, that this will have changed and shifted? Because the three stages you laid out just don't sound...
I'll explain.
...particularly compelling.
Between 22 and 24, I believe that we'll start seeing high-end, low-cost LiDARs that will enable the deployment of LiDARs in consumers' vehicle, in deeper penetrations. Then at that point, once price points will go down to few hundred dollars per LiDAR, we'll start seeing LiDAR at more common segments beyond the high-end S-Class 7 series, which will bring volumes of millions or tens of millions. Now you ask about how many LiDARs per car. So we are seeing two types of scenarios. One is, or two types of LiDARs, short range, low cost, MEMS 905 nanometer for the corners, and long range LiDARs. I expect same as what happened with radars that we have today. Low cost, short range radars around the car and in the front, in the back. Long-range radars. That's what I believe we'll see in the commercial, on the standard consumer vehicles. And in autonomous driving, we'll have 360 degrees long-range.
Do you see in sort of the shorter term to sort of bridge the gap to the sort of real growth in the market that you see coming in 4 or 5 years, in the shorter term, are there non-automotive opportunities for LiDAR that could add some scale to companies that want to try and get revenue sooner? Or is it a waiting game at this point?
There are a lot of opportunities out there for LiDARs beyond automotive. However, the automotive market is so big and so unique that it's very difficult to do both for companies. And I will be surprised if a company will be successful, if any company will be successful doing both. The challenge of putting an automotive-grade high-performance LiDAR at low cost on a vehicle is big enough. And luckily today, there is enough interest for that and belief in the industry that about the potential of this and the value. So you can get reasonable funding to get to that point.
Ronnie, where can we learn more about Oryx Vision? On Twitter? I mean, I looked at your website. It didn't have that much information.
We're working on a new version. It will come up soon. And in the meantime, yeah, you can follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter.
There. Are you working on it while lying in the sand at Tel Aviv Beach?
Okay, I'll explain. Our strategy is that we believe that there are about less than a dozen companies that are, in a way, are the... in a way, the trendsetter, or they know what they're talking about. And we focus our marketing and communication efforts directly with them. We believe that there is a challenging signal-to-noise problem in the industry. We decided to operate in this mode where we focus our efforts on direct communication with, as I said, less than a dozen partners. If you want to learn more, please feel free to ask.
All right, well, that was nice and cryptic. Let's wrap this up. Ed, what are you working on right now?
Stop asking that question.
No one cares about my work either. All right, Kirsten, thanks for sitting next to us. Thanks so much, Ronnie and Nate.
Thank you very much, and welcome to Tel Aviv. Please come visit us again. I'm sure you like it, right?
Oh, I love it.